I would now invite Bruce to the lectern for an offering of reflections on behalf of the family. Bruce.
As John said, I am Bruce, proud son of Tom Bellwood. John, I thank you very much for the assistance you've been to me this very challenging week. And I will gladly take all of the strength of everyone in this room to complete a fitting tribute to my father. On behalf of the family, I want to thank all of you for coming. You all have busy lives, and so nice to you to break away from that to honor my father. Third Presbyterian Church has had my parents as members for 55 years. Mom was a trustee for years, and Dad is feeling very at home right now. Dad is also feeling very comfortable. I picked out for him to be laid to rest his favorite warm wool sweater, his favorite wool shirt, his favorite corduroys, rag socks, comfortable slippers. And when I got them all laid out in the bed, I had to laugh. They were all from L.L. Bean. Dad, you could be a commercial. Dad's passing, of course, is very sad, especially for family and close friends. But let's all try and look at today as a celebration of his life. He had a long and wonderful life. He and his family should be endlessly fortunate, feel endlessly fortunate. After the funeral service of paying proper tribute to my father, please join the family at Grinnell's Restaurant to join us in continuing the celebration of his life. Come one and all, he would love the fact of everyone enjoying themselves in his memory. He was a man of few words, but it didn't mean he didn't like to socialize. I was offered a very nice new American flag for the ceremony, given the fact of his veteran status. But the one you see is very special to my father. It flew over his battleship in World War II, at the end of World War II, the USS Arkansas. I have to say about my father, you'll hear me say more about how few words he said, but he did make me understand his meanings without using direct words all the time. When I knew his funeral was going to take place, and of course trying to put the proper arrangements together that he would love, all of a sudden I remembered the flag. Now, had my father ever said, "Bruce, this is the flag I would be honored to have on my casket"? No, he didn't. Dad, you could have made it a little bit easier on me. But I remember him saying through the years, every couple years, "Bruce, you want to keep track of that." And that I understand. At this very moment, across the ocean, there is a family gathering in England. My father's parents were from a small coal mining town in northern England called Fairburn. Both my parents or grandparents are buried there. So the family in England is gathering at Old St. James Churchyard in Fairburn, England, at this very hour to tell my father's parents that he's passed on. Buried in that churchyard are untold generations of Bellwoods and Stevensons. Dad would, first of all, like you all to know his family. His grandchildren, Ryan Thomas, who carries his name, made my father very happy by following his footsteps in the United States Navy. Brittany and her husband Josh were married in this very church 2 years ago, and I'm sure there were very few words given from my father about what they did for him. But I want to tell you, Brits and Josh, that was a great feeling inside that man. His daughter-in-law, Mary Kay, and George. Mary Kay is the mother of Ryan and Brittany. My children, Ashley and Trevor. My father's daughter-in-law, Karen, the mother of Ashley and Trevor. My father's lifelong best friend, William McCready. My father's niece, Pat Zollers, and her husband, Ron. Karen's mother, Norma. The funeral was delayed for two reasons. He passed before dawn on Monday. My father would have not wanted the funeral delayed this long on one hand, but on the other hand, he did not want his funeral to fall on his grandson Trevor's special day, his birthday. And the second reason, he would want Uncle Mac, William McCready, who I call Uncle Mac, time to get here comfortably from South Florida. Those two things just were a requirement I knew in my father's mind. The last or two other members of the family that you'll meet outside, they're his dogs, Fred and Jay. He would want them to be part of this in some way, so they will be saying goodbye to his casket before the hearse. And Dad would really like you to know those dogs. They may bark, but they are harmless and extremely friendly. A few very deserved thank yous. To my family, I thank you so very much. It's been a very challenging week. I didn't expect to be the level of challenge it's been, but as Dad would say, that's the way it goes. The incredible group of doctors that Dad had in his last years to give him the quality of life that Dad wanted. Quality of life was a term he used a lot. And again, he didn't send me direct messages on what he meant by quality of life, but I knew his wishes. And if I can pass along anything to any of you, it's so very important to understand someone's wishes when they get to that end of life. The doctors Maloney, Tonetti, Varen, Schenker, and Illig. Wonderful people, talented professionals, did a lot for my father and their staffs who supported those doctors right along with it. The Strong Memorial staff was so caring to Dad during this extremely tough last month of his life. The Jewish home where he went for rehabilitation for five short days. In those five short days, wow, did some people show me some caring hearts. It was just, again, it's what you'd hope for. They even allowed me to bring his pets. Just great. To my Uncle Mac, William McCready, my father's lifelong best friend. You had an impact on his life I can't put into words, and you'll never know. Your handwritten letters were constant throughout life, wherever in the country or the world you were. Your calls simply made his day. Your trips into town made him look like a kid. Ronald Reagan was the great communicator to this nation. Uncle Mac, you were the great communicator to Tom Bellwood. On countless days when I asked my father how his day was, I heard two words, Mac called. You will see, hear me say much more again about his few words. John Considine, my parents' attorney for over 50 years, who came quickly to be part of the family. Obviously, a 50-year attorney, I was pretty young, seeing as I'm 51, but I knew from the very day he walked into their lives, that's what the man was. You had a place in my father's mind of total respect, complete integrity. And whenever an issue arose that he felt needed clear, sage advice and judgment, we knew we'd hear three words, better call John. In sitting with my father in hospice at Strong, and during this long week after his passing, I've done a lot of what I call connect the dots. Because with my father saying so very few words, I had to put many things together myself. And as I've been telling Uncle Mac, I have a feeling there's going to be some more dots being connected in the coming weeks and months and years. The word that I feel most closely describes my father as understated. I am a person, those of you that know me, I'm a person of many words like my mother. My father was the opposite, a man of very few words. It amazed me, though, how much message he could convey in those very few words. And I'll say that to myself through the rest of my life. I would laugh when he would do things such as leave a full tavern where he enjoyed socializing. He would leave many, many times, in fact, almost all, without saying one single word. He'd give a high sign to the bartender, and as he was walking to the door, and all of his so many friends would be saying things as, see you, Tommy, all throughout his exit, he would give a few nods, and he'd be out the door in 10 or 15 seconds. But yet, every person in that tavern felt as though he said goodbye. It would have taken me 10 minutes to get out of those taverns. He would go on wonderful trips all over the world with my mother that, you know, for weeks on end. And he would come back, and of course, just like all of you, he would have said, hey, Dad, how was your trip? I got one word. He'd look at me, nice. You know, I think, hey, Dad, leaving out a few details? but that's how crisp and short it was. And if I go farther, he said, I'm sure your mother would love to tell you about it. When people would compliment my mother, as they did so often, she's very popular in town, those of you that knew her, over these past 7 years, I got to understand, no matter what these people would say about my mother, Dad would sit there, listen to all they had to say, and just say these words, she was quite a lady. And of course, after hearing that dozens and dozens of times, I would, you know, shake my head and just say, yep, those are the words that Dad will be forever using. And I guess it's kind of interesting. I, without knowing it, have started saying those same words. When I would ask him to speak further on a subject, more than maybe three or four words, he would say to me, no sense going on about it. I had to be happy. I heard six more words. Time after time, I would, in my way of communicating, speak distances about certain matters. Hundreds of words. What would I get back? Such comments, and I'm talking, these are individual comments, and that would be it. Better you than me. He's something. Don't let it get to you. That's just how things go. Better you than me. Don't let it surprise you. Yup. If you say so. So it It was, some ways you consider them one-way conversations, but again, with the meaning that that man could put into a few words, I guess it was pretty balanced. When I was describing a list of what plans we would do at night or on the weekend, hey, Dad, I would go on, and at any time, I knew to expect an interruption. I didn't take it the wrong way. He would look at me, eye contact, and just say, not me. So, you know, it's the old saying, what don't you understand about not me? So it's just something that he was a man who lived on his own terms. And what I described, which to me was just a wonderful string of events, in his way, he'll just step aside and, Bruce, go have fun. And he'd look down at his book or special interest magazine. He was a ferocious reader. I'll touch on that now. My father's formal education was interrupted by World War II by his own choosing. He falsified his age, actually, to be able to enter the military at age 17. He felt strongly about it, but it interrupted the education that as he grew in life, he so loved. So in reading the books, he felt like he could play catch up on what he had missed. And he would often say, time for me to go put my nose in a book. And again, it's something so wonderful I can look back on. As you'll notice in the obituary that it says, send, in lieu of flowers, send contributions to the Brighton Education Fund. That's the reason education was so extremely important to that man. If he uttered the words, if you know what's good for you, Bruce, my antenna went up. I knew that at that point, I was hearing the best advice from my father. I think back to when his mother was in the Episcopal home, and she had unfortunately lost all of her faculties. She was suffering. I went over to the other side of the room from her bed, where my father was stoically standing, and I asked her if I could give his mother, start her on some morphine. He looked at me for a moment in the eyes and then nodded his head. Not one word was spoken, just a nod of the head. I started the morphine. When my mother was in Highland Hospital, unexpectedly, a lung infection took over her very aging body, spread throughout it. Vital organs were damaged. The doctor explained it all to Dad and I. Was looking, though, as he drew all his comments to a close and looked at my father and said, what would you like to do, Tom? What would you like me to do? My father turned his head, looked at me, and pointed his one finger. The doctor looked, knew what he said. I knew then it was time to start relieving her pain with the morphine. And the suffering now. So, after saying those two things, the conclusion of what this story means, that his mother's life was ended with a nod of his head, his wife, the most revered person in his world, was ended with a point of a finger. But I want you to so know this, that even though there was not a single word said, Those two situations were handled exactly as he wished. It was what he wanted without saying a single word. In life, it can be so wonderful to do things on your own terms. And that's the way he was fortunate to live. Although my mother needs a lot of credit, deserves a lot of credit for allowing a lot of terms to be his. The fact that the man, as if I needed any more ammunition, passed on his own terms was last Saturday morning. In the early morning hours of Saturday, he ran into extremely low oxygen blood levels, blood pressure levels, heart rate. The Jewish home rushed him by ambulance to Strong Memorial Hospital. I woke up, went downstairs, realized I'd left my phone on the desk, and I looked and saw two numbers, missed call, the phone had vibrated off the desk, and I saw Jewish Home, if I've misspoken, and Strong Memorial Hospital. You can imagine, I was expecting the worst. Got there as soon as I could, but hearing my father say, "Don't rush, Bruce. It'll be there." They started life support when he got there. I asked, of course, for the doctor's full opinion on what his status was. They informed me the only way to save his life would be open heart surgery. Well, certainly understood. Nothing my father would have ever wanted. And so I made the decision to start the morphine and the life support. I found myself at that point calling the grandchildren home and calling Uncle Mac. And it was very interesting, is that because my father had prepared me, again, through really no words, but what I should do in that situation, I found it harder to make those phone calls than to tell the doctors, this is it. So thank you, Dad, for preparing me in the many different ways that you prepared me. So now, to continue the rest of that story, about living on his own terms. John Ashley arrived from Albany approximately 4 hours later, and you can imagine a person at that point in the very rough stages of oxygen levels, heart rates, blood pressures, 4 hours of morphine. I would really have said that the man, even though say they can hear, an incoherent state at that stage of life and that amount of medication. Because of course, just like all of you, didn't want your father to suffer. Ashley went into the trauma unit and heard the following. The social worker, in a very professional way, told my father, "Thomas, your journey is coming to end. Dad, in the state that he was in, turned to her and in a loud voice said one word, good. He lived and he passed on his own terms. What will the finest memory be of my father? It wasn't hard to pick it. I'd already picked it. During my mother's final years, and my mother was the kind that did everything for my father. My mother reached a point in her final 2 years of a lot of memory and physical challenge, and I can underline and emphasize those. My father, without saying a word, turned the tables. He took over her role. The roles reversed. She was so proud of him. He didn't voice it, but that meant the world to him too. Isn't it wonderful to have two-way streets? When I told my father at her passing in this very church, what that meant to me, for him to care for my mother the way he did, I remember the words, three of them, "It's quite all right." What was he most proud of in life, other than his family? His role in the United States Navy. Because of this, I thought it was a no-brainer to take him down to Washington, D.C. for the grand opening of the World War II Memorial. If none of you have seen it, you got to get down there. It's incredible. At the end of that ceremony, the President of the United States stood up and they said, "Right now, everyone on the National Mall needs to be seated. Every vendor, every member of security, everyone on the National Mall, estimated to be 500,000 people, be seated." He then said, "Please rise." The members and the veterans of World War II that are able to stand. The incredible military bands started playing, while they were seated, the national anthem. It was followed by a round of applause that I've never heard in my life. There has been a no more powerful moment that I've ever been involved in. During this time of the anthem, I looked up from seated at my father's right. I looked up at the man, obviously, with great pride and respect. He turned over his left shoulder. We very fortunately were up front, about 40 yards from the president. So he was pretty much turning his left shoulder and looking at 500,000 people and seeing so obviously few of them were standing. He turned back after a few brief moments because it didn't take him long to see what I know he needed to see. I looked up out of that right eye. I saw a small tear fall from that eye. It was a sight that I had never seen in my life. After the ceremony ended in my father's traditional way, I thought back to what he said, something very similar. Asked him about the ceremony in my long-winded way, and he said, "That was quite something." So in conclusion, without many more words that would please my father, I will say to you what my father would say if he was speaking to each of you personally. Carry on.